Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 195 of Unblocking Crypto. Al, good to see you.
Good to see you, Jason.
And once again, I keep thinking that things are going to slow down with all the price action and the not great news, but there's still a ton of good stuff going on. So I saw the market structure meeting happen last week. We talked about this where there was a bunch of crypto execs that got together, Democrats, and I think some Republicans were there. They met with the Republicans too. And what was interesting is Coinbase's CEO, Brian Armstrong, came out and said that the industry is 90% of the way there. So talking about unprecedented bipartisan cooperation among senators working to finalize the long-awaited regulatory framework, and there's still a few sticky points with Clarity Act, and it's mainly DeFi and stablecoin rewards. So those are the two big sticking points. And it seems to where DeFi is where the Democrats are really getting held up, and the stablecoin rewards is really where the banks are getting held up. So I'm not sure what's going to happen. They're talking about being bullish on getting a bill passed by year end. And hopefully it's out of the committee by Thanksgiving. But man, those are two big groups that are fighting against something that is kind of frustrating. And if you look at it too, from the Democrats' perspective, you could argue they're missing kind of the big picture from the DeFi side of things and just Bitcoin in general, where they see Bitcoin as this capitalist symbol and just tool for speculators, but they're really missing the whole deeper story about how Bitcoin is this lifeline for people living under financial repression and political censorship. So hopefully people will start searching for stories more about how that relates. And I think some of what we're trying to do here on this podcast is to talk about some of those things too and show how it's making such a big difference in other parts of the world, even though we're somewhat fighting against it here, but we're definitely making a turn to the better.
Yeah. And you know, when the Bitcoin adoption conversation and the majority of the people that are on board with Bitcoin because of what it can offer from like a self-sovereignty freedom standpoint, stateless money and all of that, a lot of those people are already on board because they've kind of been looking for this. And then, you know, ever since the ETFs have been on board and Trump's on board, now you're kind of going after that next pocket of people. And the way to get into them is the number go up. It's a new asset class, digital gold, that kind of thing. And so that process is, hey, they get into Bitcoin because they don't care what it is. They think it's going up. And then they learn about it as they kind of get involved with it and care a little bit more because they own it. And then they start to realize some of the benefits. Now, on the government side, like Brian Armstrong saying that they're 90% there. Well, that's the easiest part, right? Like, hey, we talked about the 90% of the stuff and we agree on it. And we only have 10% of stuff left to argue. I mean, we're about to have no SNAP benefits for people that can't afford groceries because of the last 1% of the CER. So that last 10% sounds good, but it's still a lot of work to do. I'll take it, right? They're talking. That's better than we were in the past. And you know how it basically you hear about Bitcoin the first time and then you start paying attention to it and then you stop. And then you hear about Bitcoin again, you start paying attention to it and it's a little more sticky. You know, and like all of these politicians are on like, you know, the first or second iteration of hearing about it and ignoring it. So, you know, it's a long road, but there's definitely a lot of good stuff coming out of Washington. I mean, you talked about the market structure meeting. We also had a new FTC chair nominated in Michael Selig, who's pro Bitcoin, SEC veteran, crypto savvy guy. I think he was on the task force, the crypto task force for the White House. And so, you know, I've got quite a few of these positive things coming out of Washington in a week where, you know, we're still in this trading range. I mean, the price action bounced back into the 100 and teens, but it's not, we're not in all-time highs. We're not going crazy, but we're getting good information and good like positive vibes in the news.
Yeah, I think he's a senior aide to Paul Aikens too. Our Aikens. So I mean, yeah, he is definitely very much a pro crypto perspective. And even there's been talks about who the next Federal Reserve chair is going to be. And that's looking like it's going to be someone that's very pro crypto. Michelle Bowman's name was thrown out there. She's the Federal Reserve Vice Chair for Supervision. I think she's one of like the five names that could replace Jerome Powell next year. And she's the one that kind of came out and even said that everything's at a crossroads from a central bank perspective, and that what if there's a need for banks and regulators to be open to new technologies and depart from an overly cautious mindset. And then she also told her staff that they should all hold a small amount of crypto to better understand it. So that's pretty exciting. And then I think it was former Fed Governor Kevin Walsh, National Economic Council Director, said Fed Governor Chris Waller, and then one of the BlackRock fixed income guys, Rick Riedler. But all these guys have a lot of connection into crypto and a lot of positive things going on that they were talking about too.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff coming out. It's very pro, you know, pro Bitcoin and pro crypto. Now it's just like time to see some action.
Yeah. Well, so from Federal Reserve, let's kind of stick there for a second. There's a proposal by one of the governors, Christopher Waller, to offer skinny master accounts to the innovation-focused banks, which will allow them qualified access to the Fed payment systems. So this would really just speed up kind of the access for the Fed services to all the crypto banks, but it would exclude benefits like earning interest or overdraft privileges. So there are some issues. Custodian Bank warned that this eligibility rules may leave some of the key players out. So it's not perfect, but it's at least they're in discussions about giving these crypto banks access to the Fed master accounts, which would be huge.
Yeah, I mean, it's something better than nothing, right? Like, you got to take progress.
Speaking of which, I think Crypto.com just filed an application with the OCC for a national bank trust charter. We've been talking about a lot of these companies here recently. Coinbase, Circle, Bridge, which is owned by Stripe, they've all been doing it, and everybody's trying to get one of those national bank trust charters so they can act as a bank in the U.S.
Yeah, I think there's only two ways to do it. Either traditional banks can get into crypto, or crypto banks can get into the traditional infrastructure. So it seems like both sides are trying. Like, so it's a matter of time before you start to see banks that are both traditional and into crypto. So it's, you know, I mean, that kind of rolls in. T. Rowe Price is the first time I've seen that institution name, or at least the first time in a long time, they filed for an active crypto ETF. So, I mean, it's the traditional institutions are very focused on crypto, and it's like gunpowder. I mean, if your competitors adopt it and you don't, you're dead. So you got to do it. And so, you know, put that on the list of companies to watch, because it's, you know, it's coming, and I think they're finally realizing it. And as time goes by, CEOs and CTOs and CIOs are all getting replaced with younger guys and girls, and they're more open to crypto.
Well, so another big thing that there's not a ton of talk about, but I think it's kind of important, is the open banking rule. So the comment period just ended for that last week. The open banking framework was first proposed back in 22 under Biden, and it was finalized in October of 22 in 24, October 22nd, 2024. What it allowed consumers to do is share their financial data with third-party apps through APIs. And this is really, if you use crypto and some other things, it's kind of a critical bridge for crypto adoption, and it allows users to connect traditional bank accounts to digital asset exchanges, which typically are blocked by banking executives hostile to crypto, so which there's still quite a few of those. So as soon as that happened, the Bank Policy Institute and the Kentucky Bankers Association filed a lawsuit the same day the rule was finalized, saying that it mandated data sharing without proper oversight of third parties, increased fraud risk by allowing unsafe practices like screen scraping, and forces banks to provide free access to systems they spent billions securing. So I think Cynthia Lummis just came out and said, large banks have shown they'll restrict access for political reasons, targeting industries and individuals they disagree with, including gun manufacturers, digital assets, churches, and even the President of the United States, which was Trump. So there's also a coalition of fintech and crypto trade groups that submitted their own letter urging the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau to affirm that Americans own their financial data, not the big banks. So hopefully we hear some positive news that this goes through and Americans kind of do have this open banking framework approved and all is right in the world again.
Yeah, I mean, I won't go back and forth from protecting my privacy and protecting my information and all that too. All my stuff is out there. Like, I mean, I've been around since the beginning of the internet and the lack of security back then. Plus, you know, I mean, my social security number hadn't changed. So there's, I don't know. My feelings towards security are not, they're probably not the same as everybody else's, especially in Bitcoin. So, you know, when you talk about KYC information and all this being held by banks, it's like, man, it's like the IRS gets hacked. Like, everybody gets hacked. So, like, I don't know that I care too much about my information. And then, you know, as far as what this means for crypto and based on the requirements and everything that's being put on the industry, you know, at this point, it's kind of like, if it's good for crypto, it's good for me. My information is already out. So roll the dice, I guess.
Yeah. So speaking of other commenting periods, we've been talking about the Genius bill, just a stablecoin bill. The comment period doesn't end until November 4th of this year. So we're still about a week away. And then once that happens, the agencies will draft and release the final regulations. So right now, this Genius Act officially doesn't take place until either 120 days after those final rules are published or 18 months after enactment, whichever comes first. So right now, this is just kind of a legal framework awaiting activity rather than some sort of fully functioning regime. And there's a ton of stuff happening with stablecoins, and we'll talk about some of the stuff in other countries in reaction to the Genius bill too. But this still isn't written in stone yet. It's still got some ways to go.
Yeah, that's a pretty long way to go. I mean, that's 2027 before it hits the ground. So that's a pretty long way to go.
Yeah. One of the other big things that I saw too, so JP Morgan Chase, which you could argue Jamie Dimon has been anti-crypto for a long time, they are now going to allow their institutional clients to borrow against Bitcoin and Ethereum holdings. So that's a big deal to be able to use crypto as collateral for loans. This is supposed to happen by the end of this year, and it will be available globally. And it sounds like they're going to be using a third-party custodian to secure the pledged tokens. So I don't know if that's Strike or what, because Strike's one of the companies that's been doing some of that, although they're Bitcoin only. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes and how many of their customers actually start working on something like that.
Right. Or how many customers they gain. That's on my list as well, because the more things happen at the JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, Bank of America level, the easier it is for everybody else to follow in line, because like if JP Morgan's doing it, it's okay. Like they're a monster, systemically important banking institution. So if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for everybody else.
Quick break from the podcast to plug something I created. I've had the same conversation with a lot of people that were very curious about crypto. So if you are one of those ones that are curious about crypto, you want to know why it's growing, what it can do, how you can get involved, how you can protect yourself doing that, then this is for you. It's 43 plus videos that you can self-pace and you get access for forever. You get a 365-day money-back guarantee if you don't like it. The link is in the show notes, or go to www.jasonexplainscrypto.com/curious. Back to the podcast.
Yeah, so speaking of banking institutions that are maybe a little bit smaller, Custodia just announced that they teamed up with Vantage to unveil a live network of tokenized deposits across U.S. banks, which this really allows participating institutions to issue tokens that represent insured deposits, which is mainly putting traditional bank money on the blockchain while keeping it all the usual protections and regulations in place. So this is still awaiting final regulatory approval to go to scale, but that could be kind of a big deal if they're able to put everything on chain from what's happening from the and then thanks to that.
Yeah, and I mean, and that point forward, you have a model for everybody else to follow for not just the same sort of thing for other in other industries, but like similar things across like the vertical and the horizontal. So, you know, anytime something happens, it's like it's not like worth getting excited about that one thing, but the fact that that door's open, that's important.
Yeah. And then Zelle, which is owned by Bank of America, Capital One, JP Morgan, US Bank, Wells Fargo, they're one of the larger payments processor. They just announced they're going to use stablecoins to expand their payments internationally, which is a big deal for stablecoins. And this is pretty much because of the Genius Act that we were just talking about. So that's kind of a big news from my perspective.
Yeah. And like, if you haven't been paying attention, Zelle just, it's like, it's the preferred method of transferring money for banks. I'm assuming because those banks created it and they get the transfer fees or whatever. But I mean, if you go to transfer money at my banks, it pops up, don't you want to use Zelle? Like a giant yes button or a small no, I'd like to do an ACH or whatever. And so it just kind of, once the banks are on board with crypto or whatever, it just kind of tells you where they're going to put, what they're going to put in front of people's faces when they're banking. So, yeah, I think this is a step in the right direction. I think it's good. You know, you can get cross-border payments and things like that if Zelle is using stablecoins to go international. So I think that's a good thing in general.
Yeah, A16Z came out with a crypto report, which is kind of interesting, and talked about almost how bullish the industry was, which is no big surprise. Some of the highlights from that, they talked about how the crypto market grew to over $4 trillion this year, and the number of mobile wallet users rose 20% year over year. They estimate there are roughly 40 to 70 million active crypto users, which is up about 10 million over the past year. And it's still only a fraction of the 716 million people who own crypto, which is still up about 16% from last year. They also talk about stablecoins. Stablecoins handled $46 trillion in transactions this year, which is rivaling Visa and PayPal and all that. The total market cap for stablecoins, around $308 billion, which is up $100 billion since January. And Tether, of course, is the largest one at $183 billion. They talked about this is mainly due to the clear regulation happening and Clarity Act and Genius Act and just everything else that Trump has kind of signed into law so far. But that institutional adoption is also another key factor. And we've been talking about JP Morgan here a lot today. We've talked about BlackRock in the past and even companies like Visa, Stripe, Fidelity, PayPal. They're all offering all these crypto products and all the exchange traded products that are helping grow things. I think the on-chain crypto holdings are like $175 billion, which is up 169% from $65 billion last year. So it's just, I mean, there's been so much going on for the last few years with almost this war on crypto. And now it's been, 8 months, and so much has changed from that perspective. So it's, I think, pretty exciting. They talk about clear regulations, continued institutional adoption, and stronger infrastructure is going to help crypto become a bigger part of the global financial system moving forward.
Yeah, you talk about, you know, it's a lot's been going on. You know, after, it's almost been the beach ball held underwater under previous administrations, and now it's like, poof, they let go, and it springs to the top. All the action happens, all the stuff that people have been wanting to do. And not only that, I mean, is this kind of continues on over the next year, next several years, more and more people are going to have more and more confidence that what they can do, like the rules aren't going to change underneath them. And so I expect to see a continued like development and innovation in the space.
Kraken is in the news too. So Kraken is kind of the competitor to Coinbase, US-based exchange. Their revenue more than doubled in this third quarter year over year. They're still expecting to have a public listing, I think, sometime next year. They recently raised $500 million, a valuation of $15 billion. So another large exchange looking to IPO in the US here shortly. Should be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, no, I like Kraken. Like, I haven't really ever heard of them being involved in any crazy stuff or screwing customers or rehypothecating or doing any funky stuff. They just seem to kind of be there. You know, Coinbase gets a ton of press, but Kraken's been around for quite a while.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the treasury companies. Strategy, of course, had another buy again, 390 Bitcoin, worth about $43 million. All of that came from the Strike and Stride ATM issuance, none from their MSTR stock. They now hold 640,808 Bitcoin. If you look at all the publicly traded companies, there's probably about 110 billion in Bitcoin, I think, and Strategy holds 74 of that 110 alone. So it's wild.
Yeah, and their stock price is basically holding right in the high 200s, low 300s. Their multiple on their net asset value just keeps eroding away. It's like 1.3 something now. And, you know, I mean, they used to be closer to the twos. So their Bitcoin price goes up, their Bitcoin per share goes up, their price per share goes down. So I think when you see, basically it's discounting what MicroStrategy can do with all of this Bitcoin, right? It's saying that their Bitcoin's worth, would you say, $75 billion. Well, there's only a 33% premium on that. So it's almost like, yeah, okay, congratulations on holding $75 billion worth of Bitcoin. If you can't do anything with it, it's only worth $75 billion. And I don't think I don't think MicroStrategy is done innovating and coming up with ways to make Bitcoin useful. And I don't think Michael Saylor's done wrapping it up. I mean, like, when you look at the mobile phone wave, this, you know, the iPhone just came out. Like, they weren't done with the iPhone when the iPhone came out. They still revolutionized, you know, everybody still had iPods and saved their music locally. Like, there's a whole infrastructure built around streaming music, and that goes for a lot of different things. So they haven't done any of that stuff yet. And when MicroStrategy does, I think that multiple increases, and that'll, you know, I think Bitcoin price goes up. I think their NAV goes up, and I think that they're in a pretty good spot. Could be wrong, but that's the thesis.
Yeah, I think I was listening to some of the True North podcast, and they had some bits in there that just talked about what MicroStrategy could be doing in 5+ years. And it's kind of insane the amount of revenue that this could generate for them. I think Citibank even just gave MicroStrategy or Strategy a buy rating with a target of $485 in the next 12 months. Although they added a caveat that it would fall if Bitcoin goes down.
Yeah. I mean, and S&P Global rated the Strategy stock as a B-, you know, as far as like AAA rated bonds and things like that. So, you know, that's not good, right? It's like about a 15% chance of insolvency and failure. But it's the first rating that a Bitcoin-based company has got. And so a low rating is better than no rating. And now that opens up, I don't know that B- opens up a big pool of funds that are now able to buy MicroStrategy stock or the preferreds. But if that, you go from B- and then over the next few years, you're into the, even just a single A, that's, you're starting to open up a lot of doors. And you know how it is, man, it's a ratchet strap, man. Once you open up a pool of funds to Bitcoin and they start to invest in it, then that, you know, maybe some of that money comes back out, but the majority of it stays in.
Yeah. So speaking of other large purchases on the Bitcoin treasury side of things, American Bitcoin, which is the Trump family-backed mining platform, they just expanded their holdings to 3865 Bitcoin. They added another, I think, almost or a little over 1,400 Bitcoin since September. And that's been through a combination of mining and secondary market purchases. So quite a bit for them. Interesting to see they continue to grow as well.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of sucks to talk about, oh, the Trump administration this, and then, oh, the Trump Bitcoin mining company that. Like,
yeah,
that's a little fishy. But, you know, welcome. I was telling my friend about like one of the things Trump did, and he's like, oh, you know, we can't do this. And I'm like, the difference is that that's been contracts have been awarded under the table and for since the beginning of government contracts. Trump just does it so everybody sees it. Like, and so this is kind of the same thing. Nancy Pelosi has been getting away with insider trading forever. Trump's just like, whatever, man. It's all out in the open. Is that better or worse? Like, it's all scammy, grifty behavior from Washington. So, you know, if somebody's going to do it and it's, they're going to be pro-Bitcoin, I favor that over Elizabeth Warren's scammy pro-banking nonsense.
Yeah. BitMine was in the news again, too. So they bought 77,000 Ethereum since their last update on October 20th. So they now have, I think, over 14 billion in Ethereum, which is more than like 3.3 million Ethereum. That's more than triple its closest Ethereum treasury company competitor right now. So it's, I mean, they are the strategy of Ethereum right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's another one of those, like, man, wish you knew back then that was actually going to take off. I mean, Ethereum was in the gutter when that whole thing started. That would have been a great entry point.
Yeah. And then around the world, BitPlanet, also they're a publicly listed firm in South Korea backed by the guy from Metaplanet and Sora Ventures. They just began their Bitcoin purchases. They purchased 93 Bitcoin on Sunday, which is one of the many expected purchases moving forward. Their goal is to get to 10,000 Bitcoin in the near future. So got a long ways to go, but 93 in a day is a good way to do it.
I mean, it puts you ahead of almost everybody else.
Yeah, I think I saw a stat that if you had more than $871 in Bitcoin, you were ahead of Germany.
Who had 50,000 Bitcoin.
Yeah, used to.
Yep.
Let's talk about some of the exchange-traded products. So the Bitcoin investment products kind of bounced back after a negative prior week. They added about $931 million. Well, they had about $513 million in net outflows the week before. The U.S. market really dominated that. Out of that $931, $843 million of that was the U.S. What's interesting, Germany-based funds actually saw one of probably their largest weeks. They had $502 million come in, but Switzerland had outflows of $329 million. So it's kind of interesting that Germany is up on the top of the list. With all that.
Oh, good for them. I mean, like the ETFs to me, they open up a lot of doors. I was looking at it. The IBIT options market that is so liquid, the covered call returns are not MicroStrategy's level of covered call returns, but just because of the volatility, the you know, you can get like using the same tactic, you can get about 75% of the premiums dollar for dollar on IBIT over compared to MicroStrategy. So the ETFs are very attractive for the financial institutions and players like that. If you're a pension fund or corporation or all of these different institutions, they can't just hold Bitcoin. It's not in their charter. They don't know how to do it. So I think that, you know, anytime the ETFs are have funds outflowing, at least for the next 12, 18 months, that's going to have to be short term because more people are going to be getting in their first go at it. And on the ETF side, I saw that there's a ton of open filings with, you know, for new ETFs, and Solana is the number one most common crypto in those ETF filings. And so that's interesting because it kind of skips over ETH in the market cap table. So that's worth paying attention to.
I think the ETH ones are already existing. So, yeah, as soon as the government turns back on, I think Solana being the big one that everybody does. But there's also 100 other ones that are coming out at the same time. So it'll be interesting to see which ones people go into.
Yeah.
I guess the other interesting thing, I forgot to talk about Switzerland, even though they had 329 million outflows, that was mainly an asset transfer between providers rather than a selling pressure. Ethereum, we just mentioned that their funds slipped like 169 million in for the week in outflows. And if you look at year-to-date inflows of all the ETP funds, it's at $30.2 billion, which is still behind 2024's $41.6 billion. So we'll see in the next couple of months if things pick up quite a bit.
Yeah, and I mean, that's important to remember, like $200 million outflow is effectively a push. You're looking at, yeah, you know, billions that year. The difference between a billion and a million is basically a billion, right? So once you change that letter, it's, you know, you have orders of magnitude that are just built into that. That is, it's difficult to remember. I mean, that's 999 million is the difference between a billion and a million. There's a big one.
So around the world, there was some kind of big news from a handful of companies. So Relay, which is a Swiss Bitcoin app, is, I think, just became one of the first Bitcoin-only companies to receive regulatory approval under Europe's landmark MiCA framework. So if you look, Binance and Coinbase are still trying to navigate that and the whole process, which gives Relay this head start over a lot of these other companies. They're going to be the first Bitcoin-only firm to achieve compliance, and their goal is to bring Bitcoin to as many people as possible, simple, secure, and regulated. So exciting to see that happen in Switzerland.
That sounds good to me. Like, as soon as companies start figuring out how to navigate the regulation, then other companies don't have to figure it out. They just have to copy the guys. So it kind of starts to really open the doors. Being the first one is the hardest part.
Yeah. Blockchain.com, they also announced they received a MiCA license as well. It was granted by the Maltese Financial Services Authority. And then Revolt is planning to roll out their crypto services in the EU. They just got their MiCA license from the Cyprus Securities and Exchange Commission. So they're interesting how they're all kind of going after different ones. I think Revolt is, they've talked about, they're like $75 billion now, and their crypto product and trading activities jumped almost 300% from a couple of years ago, going to $674 million. So yeah, it's exciting to see all this stuff happening for the crypto companies in Europe, for sure.
Yeah, no, this week I feel like there was quite a bit of movement on this stuff. So price will still trade in its trading range bound, you know, by like 105 and 125. But at a certain point, it bounces out. And then all of this stuff that we talk about is like, oh, it did matter. And then that's the new base. So yeah, I think the more companies that kind of stick their neck out and jump in early, you know, you're going to be rewarded. And if you don't do it, that's fine too. Whatever else you do, you could go out of business because of that decision as well. It's like, you know, avoiding a Bitcoin or crypto move and choosing another path doesn't guarantee success. But if, I mean, you can tell if you're early into the crypto side, the rewards are significant.
Well, speaking of a country that doesn't want to miss the boat anymore, I have some positive news to talk about Canada, I guess, to start with, which is rare these days, but they are moving pretty swiftly to build a regulatory framework for stablecoins, and they want to include it in the federal budget, which is tabled for November 4th of next week, right? So they are talking about tackling the bottleneck in classifying stablecoins, whether it's securities or derivatives, and really avoiding the capital flight to US dollar-backed tokens, which I think the rest of the world is kind of focused on too. One of the lobbies and Canadian innovator guys had talked about that delays could erode demand for Canadian bonds, raise interest rates, and weaken the Bank of Canada's control over monetary supply dynamics. In other words, without domestic options, any regulatory clarity and Canada capital may fly south. So no surprise there, but it'll be interesting to see if Canada does actually do something to kind of prop up that side of the community moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, there's been very little positivity on the Canadian side, so that's a good move. I don't know how much staying power it'll have, but you got to take what you can get.
Well, speaking of the opposite side from Canada, so the government of British Columbia is moving to permanently bar new cryptocurrency mining projects from connecting to the provincial power grid, as it's saying that it's shifting towards major industries that will better serve its clean energy and economic growth goals. So And we've talked about this, how beneficial some of the Bitcoin mining can be to help secure your overall grid. And at the end of the day, in reality, the hotspots for mining are not in British Columbia. They've already gone to Texas and the Midwest and the Nordic region and Latin America and all that kind of stuff. But it's just crazy that British Columbia is now, instead of making smart decisions and making political ones, I guess no surprise, because it's coming out of Canada these days.
Yeah, and you know, I did some work in Canada. A lot of hydro. Hydro works. Hydro works for AI data centers. It works for Bitcoin mining. It works for municipalities. You can, you know, it's steady flow. And then if you even have to pump back up overnight, then you can use, you know, they've got Canada in general. I'm not sure about British Columbia specifically, has quite a bit of nuclear power, which they got to do something with it at night. So it's a good complement with hydroelectric. But when you talk about like your traditional solar, wind, renewable energy that was kind of popular for the last decade or more, it's not a great energy source for data centers. For, you know, everybody's on this AI data center push, and that's not good. You need steady power. Like you can't, you know, Bitcoin mining, sure, cut it on and off, no big deal. AI data centers aren't that way at all. They need to run full speed all the time. Get these tokens crunched for all of these queries that are coming in as AI is replacing Google.
Yeah. India was in the news here recently too. So we talked about WazirX a while ago. They were an exchange that got hacked, and they actually just resumed operations about 4 days ago after about a year-long hiatus. So they had a Singapore High Court approval restructuring, and they're promising zero trading at launch. And I mean, I guess that's good. And it'll be interesting to see if the Indian population puts their faith back in WazirX. But the court, High Court there, ruled that the crypto constitutes property protected under constitutional law. So there was a bunch of, it was like 3,500 XRP tokens that the exchange was going to use some sort of socialization of loss and sell that to help pay back for the $234 million that were drained. And the bank or the court said it is not a tangible property, nor is it a currency. However, it is a property which is capable of being enjoyed and possessed in a beneficial form. So this is really kind of a big win for crypto, and it kind of strengthens the consumer protection for crypto holders and hopefully paves the way for some clear regulatory frameworks, although India seems to be dragging their feet on a lot of that too.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like every time we talk about India, we mention, why aren't they going faster? Why aren't they more involved? Why aren't they more in the lead? I mean, China has made it clear, like, that, you know, they don't like to see their capital escape, and they keep a tight grip on everything. But India seems like they're more of a local player. They're very, when you listen to India talk about how they buy their oil, where they get their energy, they're very Indo-centric. They're very much about what's good for India. It doesn't really matter what, like, if they disagree politically with, you know, their supplying countries and who they're importing and exporting with. If it's good for India, they're in. But they don't seem to be that way when it comes to crypto. And they seem to be kind of sitting on their hands and waiting out. I'm not sure why that is, but it is very consistent. I mean, this is decades worth of paying attention to this and never hearing India. It's, you know, somebody needs to run on, like, hey, I'm going to take India. We're going to be a hub. Like, we have the manpower to do all of this stuff. Yeah, everybody, all these American companies use Indian resources. Why don't we just create our own resources? So, you know, top level companies and then utilize the resources below. So I'm looking forward to seeing kind of what India does in the next few years. They have to do something.
For sure. IBM was in the news here too recently. So they got involved in crypto and blockchain a while ago with the whole Stellar blockchain, but they just announced they're going to launch a new platform for banks, governments, and corporations to build and manage blockchain-based services with enterprise-grade security and compliance. They developed this with the digital wallet infrastructure provider DFNS, Understand. I think they're calling it the digital asset haven platform. It will allow institutions to manage the full digital asset lifecycle from custody to transaction and settlement. It will work across 40 connected public and private blockchains, which is pretty interesting. DFNS, they've created over 15 million wallets for 250 clients, and they have a lot of this custody and transaction management experience that they're bringing to this partnership. So that's kind of a big deal for IBM to get involved in something like that. And I'm intrigued to see if there's companies that jump all over that and what they're going to do from there.
Yeah, I mean, IBM is another company we almost never talk about. Maybe this, I don't know that this is the first time we talked about it, but it's not the third, and it's been a long time. So, yeah. You know, but all of these companies, they're in the space. What, you know, how long are they going to sit on their hands and let somebody else take them, you know, run them over and disrupt them? So good to hear their name in it.
Rumble was in the news too. They are working with Tether to incorporate Bitcoin tipping into their video sharing network. It's expected by mid-December of this year, which is interesting. They're, of course, a rival to YouTube. They have about 50 million active users. And the Tether CEO pretty much said this is one of the biggest user bases that would have started adopting Bitcoin and stablecoins. So they, Rumble had already adopted a Bitcoin treasury strategy and purchased some Bitcoin already, but this is kind of a big deal. And I think it'd be an amazing use case if you create some sort of digital video and people like it and they can tip you. That'd be awesome.
Oh, I think that this is the way to fix social media and all the bot action and all the fake accounts and everything. Is tipping great, but if you flip a switch, because you know, if you go into X, some people, you can't reply to some people unless you're a verified account. You can't reply to some people unless you follow them or they follow you or whatever. Well, this, if you flip it on and say, hey, you can only reply to me if you hold sats, right? Or you hold some fraction of some stablecoin. And then, you know, every time you comment, there's just a verification transfer of some level of value. You know, even if it's, you know, a hundredth of 1 cent, you can't afford to run a bot farm if it costs anything. So if Rumble can go from tipping to that, I think that catches on.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. We talked, man, a few months ago about Mega ETH. They just had their ICO. They're a project dedicated to building a real-time blockchain. So the ICO was supposed to be open for 72 hours. Well, it oversubscribed more than 3x in about 30 minutes. They were trying to raise 50 million. They got 150 million worth of bids at the max price, which means the implied fully diluted value is just over $3 billion. So yeah, kind of interesting to see this. And if you're in the US, you had to be an accredited investor. They have a mandatory year lockup and a 10% discount, of course, on the price. The lockup is optional for non-US participants. It was also interesting, I was reading Mega ETH's team was only going to get about 9.5% of the allocation. So this could be intriguing to see how this project does and if there's really interest in a real-time blockchain.
Yeah, I am going to pay attention every time you talk about it.
T0 just announced their plans to pursue an IPO as well. They have a blockchain-powered platform for tokenized securities and real-world assets. This is kind of their next step in building a regulated infrastructure for digital assets through a US-based broker-dealer platform. So, of course, there's still regulatory approval that needs to happen, but that's exciting to see more companies that are doing RWA stuff becoming public.
Yep. No, we haven't talked about RWA too much lately. That was real hot and heavy a couple of years ago. So I expect to see more and more of that.
Some other big news that I guess is only important for some people. CZ just got pardoned by Trump. Gave him a full pardon. If you recall, back in 2023, he pleaded guilty to violations of anti-money laundering laws and had a four-month prison sentence and like a $4.3 billion settlement between Binance and the DOJ. So this pardon removes all remaining legal penalties for CZ. I think what Caroline Leavitt kind of told everybody was that Trump had exercised his constitutional authority by issuing a pardon for Zhao, who was prosecuted by the Biden administration in their war on cryptocurrency. the Biden administration's war on crypto is over.
Yeah, it's the only thing I saw on this, and whether he should be pardoned or not, I don't even know. I mean, 2 years of all these penalties because he didn't comply with regulations. That seems appropriate, I guess. I don't know. It's not like he destroyed people's net worth and things like that. But the funniest part was I saw Trump respond to someone asking him about it. He had no idea who he was, no idea what he did wrong. People told me he was a good guy. He didn't do anything wrong. Like, he just had no clue. I'm like, you know what? If you're going to run a country, you can't really dig into the details of everything. But you probably ought to have something pretty good to say when you know you're going to get asked about it. He's like, his thing was, I don't know who it is. I trust my people. They said, let him out. I let him out.
Yeah. I think the quote that I saw was when someone asked him, he said, you know nothing about nothing. You're fake news. At the request of a lot of very good people. Then he pardons CZ at the request of a lot of very good people who told him that what he did is not even a crime.
That's the video that I listened to. Yeah, like the lady said, you don't know crypto, you don't know anything, you're famous. Like, it's I don't know. I think it's funny. I think it's funny that he pardoned a guy and didn't really even know any of the details. But honestly, if you're running a country, you can't spend more than 5 minutes on that. So
yeah,
go figure. At a certain point, it's like, yeah, you just don't pardon SBF because somebody said he's a good guy and SBF gave him $10 million to say it.
Yeah, I mean, I think what SBF and what CZ did are two totally different things. Like, wow. I think what CZ and Binance have done has been instrumental in improving the crypto economy. And you could make arguments that yes, there are definitely some issues, but I think overall they did a pretty good job. I know I did see some of the top Democrats, as soon as Trump did this, they, of course, went after Trump. And shocker, it was Elizabeth Warren and Maxine Waters. And I think even Elizabeth Warren tweeted out, if Congress should not stop this kind of corruption and pending market structure legislation, it owns this lawlessness. And CZ responded back, a U.S. senator can't get her facts right in a public post about a person's charge. So there was no money laundering charges. And yeah, it was kind of interesting to see this all going back and forth. I mean, thanks to X, we can see it all in public.
Yeah, there's a level of transparency that used to not be there.
Yeah. So speaking of VNB, which is kind of what Binance has helped create, they just had their 33rd quarterly VNB burn. So they burned over $1.2 billion of VNB. And even Robinhood just announced, or I think they've already listed VNB, because they followed in Coinbase's footsteps that we talked about last week.
Yeah, like BNB is back in the news. Like that's we don't talk about it very much.
No. Polymark was in the news again too. So their CMO just confirmed that the platform will be launching a native Poly token, and there will be an accompanying airdrop following the company's planned U.S. app rollout. So I think they got to focus on the U.S. app, and then they'll worry about the token. But that's I don't know if that's going to create more trading activity on Polymarket or not, because there's already a crap ton of it.
Yeah, I mean, the Polymarket, they're hot right now. So it would be the time to kind of do the U.S. launch, run the token. Like, honestly, what's the downside? I mean, start it out at $1. And if it runs up because of demand, you win.
Almost makes you want to go place a bet on Polymarket and hope that it's like a Uniswap type of award where you just get a bunch of their token and kind of went up like 30x, I think, when they did that. So Peter Schiff was in the news. Oh, goodness. He just announced that he's exploring a new way to make bullion digital via the blockchain. So he has revealed his plans for a tokenized gold platform during an interview last week. His platform is said to include a debit card that will allow users to buy, hold, and spend tokenized gold. So the best part about this was some of the responses from the industry. One of the ETF analysts from Bloomberg said, congratulations, you just invented the ETF. He talked about some of the other options that VanEck and Goldman Sachs have that hold physical gold in the vaults and let shareholders redeem them, their shares for actual gold, since Peter Schiff said you couldn't actually get the gold out. It was just going to be all tokenized. And then CZ came out and said that it is not on-chain gold that he's referring to, but it was more like a trust me bro token due to its reliance on third-party custodians for redemption, which I thought was pretty funny. He talked about how tokenizing gold is not on-chain gold, and that some you got to trust some third party to give you some gold at a later date, even though after their management changes, maybe decades later during a war, et cetera. So Peter Schiff apparently came back out and publicly challenged him to a debate comparing Bitcoin to tokenized gold. And CZ accepted. There's no date set yet on when that's going to happen, but that would be really intriguing to see CZ and Peter Schiff kind of talk about Bitcoin and digital gold.
I would watch that debate. Peter Schiff is actually pretty good in these things because he is, whether he's right or wrong, he's so well versed in his opinion on gold. The problem that he's got is if you're holding gold and you've tokenized it, everything is reliant on you custodying the gold. So there's costs involved with that. You've got capital gains problems, right? If you're holding my gold and I'm spending my gold, you need to track my cost basis for my gold as well as what I spent. And like, if I spend $42, are you going to shave off $42 of my gold? Or is this like an aggregation of everybody's spends and deposits? And then it just becomes an accounting game. But like, there's no guarantee that you have all the gold you say you have. There's no, you know what I mean? You have all of the same problems that you have with gold. Like, you might be JP Morgan and have tungsten wrapped in gold. So there's plenty of problems that go along with that. And I do like when Peter Schiff talks because he is smart. And when he's not talking about Bitcoin versus gold and he is talking about sound money, he's pretty spot on. So the more I feel like the more he talks to people in the crypto and Bitcoin space that will talk reasonably and not get into like a shouting name calling thing, the closer he is to, well, I think he's mostly a charade in order to get clicks and engagement. But you know, over time, I think it starts to like, the more you watch Peter Schiff, the more you're attracted to Bitcoin.
Yeah. And I think the more you understand it, the more you get attracted to Bitcoin too. So it's to have that sound money conversation makes it easier to like and understand Bitcoin and want to move towards that direction moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the first step into like getting into this Bitcoin mindset is understanding that the current system has flawed and is likely to fail over a long enough time period. And I mean, you look at the gold price that's shot up, well, it's kind of starting to turn over. You know, like the people that are in that for speculation, they're gonna cash that out and take profit and go somewhere with it. Some of that money is gonna find its way into Bitcoin.
Yeah. Speaking of things that somewhat failed, Mt. Gox is in the news here recently too. They were supposed to pay back their creditors in October of this year. That's been pushed out a year. So you're not going to see a ton of money come back into the crypto space for at least another year when people maybe get that money back.
Yeah, that's a long run they've had. Mt. Gox, yeah. A long, long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, around 10 years or so, I think that we're talking about. So all this stuff where we've talked about recent hacks and people trying to get their money back. I mean, it could be a decade before it happens based on what's happening with Mt. Gox.
Yeah, self-custody works.
Yeah. Speaking of self-custody, so Ledger, which is one of the wallet companies out there, just released their Nano Gen 5. They developed it with a key Apple artist, Susan Kerr, who was one of the designers of the early Apple Macintosh iconography. So Care was brought in by the iPod co-creator Tony Fadell, who joined the Ledger board last year. So yeah, interesting that Ledger is trying to make it be the Apple of digital wallets. I'm intrigued to see if that actually continues to take off or what happens there.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much stuff that's about to happen. There's in the next 6 to 12 months, it's gonna be hard to keep up.
Yeah, and then the last thing that I had was talking about the Solana phone support. So we've talked in the past about how Solana Mobile had the Saga phone that went kind of crazy. Well, they decided they're no longer going to provide software updates and security patches. It was their first generation Android phone. They've now moved on to the Seeker, which is their second gen phone. And this is meaning that they are ending the support in less than 2 years after it came out, which is not very long and a lot less than what Apple and Google do these days. So that's something to think about if you're thinking about going to a Solana Mobile type of phone, is you might have to upgrade every year, year and a half.
Yeah, that's too quick. I don't want to change phones at all. I can't. I think my eyes are getting bad fast enough that is the screen's better, it doesn't matter. If the camera's better, it doesn't matter. My eyes are getting worse. Yeah. So let my phone last a decade.
Well, the problem with your eyes is you're probably looking at your phone too much. That's the other issue. So.
Well, just getting old, man. I feel like every time I turn around, like I got another buddy of mine who's got a set of reading glasses.
Yeah, I'm trying to delay that as long as possible. What else did I miss?
Oh, I don't know if you missed much, man. Mining hash rate at a new all-time high. That's a good sign for the security of the network. It's a good sign for Bitcoin mining companies. It's a good sign. Well, it's not a good sign for their profitability, but it is a good sign for their, you know, there's still enough money to be made, profit to be made, that mining is still on the increase. Usually, price follows the hash rate. And if the hash rate goes up, that's a good sign for the price in the future. The other thing that you couldn't have gotten was, you know, every year or two, the fact that Bitcoin in a Roth IRA makes so much sense to me that I can't, like, that everyone should have Bitcoin in their Roth. Like, even if you just don't have Bitcoin any other way, if you, you know, I don't know what you can put into a Roth these days, 6,000 or something a year, so that's 500 a month. If you dollar cost average into Bitcoin at $500 a month only in your Roth through the ETFs, I feel like that's a good move. No capital gains taxes, no, you know, nothing on the gains. So when you're talking about, it's available at 59 and a half, you could use that Bitcoin to retire at 59 and a half. I would, depending on how old you are and depending on Bitcoin returns, that's going to get you to your 65 range. I mean, you know, you could just straight up use Bitcoin to retire early if you didn't do anything else different. So anyway, that's the thought I had. And the more I think about it, the more I'm like, if you're not into Bitcoin at all, just buy some in your Roth IRA. Like, you can't touch it for 20 years anyway. It's not like you're going to be upset about it.
Yeah, and if you have a Roth 401k, you can put even more than the Roth IRA. So yeah, that's the way to do it. That's for sure.
Yep.
I mean, the goal is every month to have more Bitcoin than you did the previous month. If you can figure out a way to do that, then you're succeeding.
Correct. That's it for me.
Cool. Well, as always, great catching up, and we'll talk again next week.
Sounds good, Jason. Thanks a lot.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.